We have come to the end of an era in the history of God's people. Jacob, the patriarch, the father of the 12 tribes of Israel, had died. His sons had brought his body back to the promised land and buried him there according as he desired of them. And now they are returned to Egypt, and they will sojourn there for another about 400 years until it was time for them to leave Egypt to inherit the promised land. But now, as soon as Joseph and his brothers and their families returned to Egypt, we realize that something was gnawing in the hearts of Joseph's brothers. They had not forgotten the terrible things that they did to Joseph, their brother. How they wanted to kill him, and then how they sold him to Egypt. And their conscience gave them no rest, even though Joseph had acknowledged them and embraced them and showed them that he had forgiven them. But because their conscience gave them no rest, they began to worry about what Joseph might do to them now that their father, Jacob, had died. And so they sent a messenger to Joseph with the words in verse 16, "Thy father did command before he died, saying, so shall ye say unto Joseph, forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sin, for they did unto thee evil. And now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy father." Now we are not sure if it is indeed true that the father had told them to send message to Joseph saying these things. Why did the father not say that to Joseph if it is true? But in any case, this is amazing, isn't it? It's amazing what they wanted Joseph to do. For 17 years since they came into Egypt, they had not forgotten what they did. Now 17 years have passed and they are still thinking that Joseph had not forgiven them. They harbor this suspicion that Joseph did not really forgive. They assumed that he was merely giving face to their father, and so he acted the way that he did. They assumed that he was bearing a grudge against them. They totally misjudged their brother's character, perhaps because they put themselves in his shoes, and they think, what would we do if we are in Joseph's shoes? We are not going to forgive him that easily if we are in his shoes. And so they did what they did. They sent a messenger with a message which we are not even sure whether is truly the case, desiring that Joseph should forgive them. But they were totally wrong. Totally wrong to think that way of Joseph. Joseph was so surprised and overwhelmed by their request that he broke down and cried. We read that in verse 17. Of course, we are not told why he wept, but it's not difficult to imagine how terrible he must have felt to have his brothers thinking all these 17 years that he had ought against them when he had already forgiven them. Well, in any case, Joseph probably sent the messengers back to get his brothers to come down. We can imagine the anxiety that they must have felt when they saw the messengers coming and the messenger telling them, "Oh, Joseph cried and he wants you all to come down to see him." And he couldn't tell the reason why Joseph cried. Was it in anger that he cried? Or was it any other reason? So they rushed down to see Joseph, and when they saw Joseph, they fell on their face and they cried to him, "Behold, we be thy servants, we are your slaves." They were terrified. But oh, what a gracious response Joseph gave to them. Verse 19, "Fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, ye sought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore, fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. Joseph had no thought of vengeance at all. In fact, he saw God's hand in the whole matter, so that while his brothers meant evil against him, he knew that God meant it unto good, not only for him, but for the whole nation. So far from wanting to exact revenge, Joseph was determined to protect his brothers and their families and to provide for them. Joseph's brothers had totally misunderstood him. This must have been the reason why Joseph cried. But now, what would the Lord have us learn from this passage? Well, let me suggest three lessons related to the Christian response to unhappy events that happened to them. First, when faced with unhappy circumstances in our life, we must remember and believe that God is in sovereign charge over everything and is doing all things well for his people. Secondly, since we believe that God is in sovereign control, we should respond with kindness rather than vengeance toward those who have occasioned our hurt. Thirdly, since we believe that God is sovereign, let us encourage one another to trust him in his sovereignty. First then, remember that God is sovereign. Now, this is the key lesson in our text. Joseph's brothers had sold him to Egypt out of spite and jealousy. Joseph suffered greatly, but he continued to trust and hope in the Lord. And eventually, it became clear what was the Lord's purpose for his suffering. The Lord was not only building Joseph up in his faith, he also intended for Joseph to be promoted in Egypt so that he might preserve alive the whole nation of Israel during a time of famine. God meant it unto good, even though the thoughts and imaginations of the hearts of Joseph's brothers were wickedness only. So we are taught in Psalm 76, "Surely the wrath of man shall praise thee, the remainder of wrath shalt thou restrain." God is sovereign even over the wicked imagination and wicked deeds of men. Nothing is outside God's control. Even the wicked wrath of men will be used of the Lord to fulfill his purpose and to glorify him. Indeed, you allow man only so much freedom as to execute their wrath as would serve his purpose. The psalmist tells us that the remainder of wrath God restrains. Only so much as would serve his purpose God allows, and God has ordained that it would come to pass. Therefore, remember that God is sovereign. But if God is sovereign, why did Joseph have to suffer the way he did? Someone may ask. Could God not simply have promoted him? Or for that matter, why was it necessary that there be a famine in the first place? If there were no famine, then there's no need to preserve the people alive in a famine. Then there's no need to sell Joseph to Egypt. Well, the answer to these questions is the same. God is sovereign. And he has chosen that the best way to cultivate his people individually and corporately was to have them go to Egypt for a period of time, in a time of great trial and tribulation. He has determined that the way that he has chosen will be the best way that will redound to his glory and will be redound to their good. In this regard, it was God's intention that his people should remain in relative isolation for 400 years before they inherit the promised land. He will have the people grow into a powerful nation before coming into the promised land. The enclave of Goshen was in God's plan. It's not an accident. It's part of God's plan. God had already indicated to Abraham that the people would be there for 400 years. It was always in God's plan that this be so. God sovereignly brought it to pass. So likewise, it was God's intention that Joseph should be promoted through persecution. In this way, not only was Joseph's faith strengthened, but Joseph in his suffering would become a type of Christ. As Christ would suffer for the sin of his people in order that he might save his people, so God appointed for Joseph to suffer for the sin of his brothers. As Christ would be raised from the prison of death and exalted to be king over his people, so Joseph must be raised from the dust of prison and exalted to be ruler over his people. As Christ would love and care for his people despite their ingratitude, despite their hard thoughts against him, so Joseph must do the same. Such is the wisdom of God. Such is the power of God. So that when we read the life of Joseph, our minds are brought to think of the Messiah. What may appear to be out of control is really under control, under God's sovereign control. What may appear to be working contrary to us is in God's hand doing good to us. So the Apostle Paul says, and we know that all things work together for good to them that love him, to them who are the called according to his purpose. Romans 8:28. Children, you must memorize this verse. If you have not memorized any verse at all, this is one verse you must have in your mind. We must remember this. The working of God's providence is like the internals of a mechanical clock. Have you taken up a clock, open it up, and you see what's inside? And you see the gears are moving in all sorts of directions. It looks very random. It doesn't look like there's any pattern. But fit the face on it, and you look at the face of the clock, and what do you see? The second hands are going in a specific pattern. The minute hand is going the right way. The hour hand is going the right way, and all in proper synchrony. So it is with our life. Things may appear to be contrary to us. Some things we look at it and say, why does this have to be like that? But it's all in God's hand. What may be painful and contrary to us are actually in God's hand, working for our good and for God's glory. Joseph's example is the most classic. Indeed, even the example of the Lord, who is the anti-type of Joseph, serves that purpose too, isn't it? The Lord is crucified, suffered greatly, with the end, all this for our good. But I'm sure we have our own stories in our own life. You see how when we look back at the suffering that we went through, we say, actually it was for our good. And we can thank God that we went through that time of illness or that time of failure or that broken relationship or whatever pain that we suffered, and we say, it was good. It was good in God's hand. A story is told of a man, and I'm told this is a true story. A man was going for work one day, and he had bought a new pair of shoes. And as he walked, a blister developed on his heel. It was a very irritating thing. You think, whoa, this is terrible, you know, this blister. Now I'm going to be late for work, he said. So he limped to the pharmacy, and he went there, he bought a band-aid, a plaster. So he stopped by, sat there, took out the plaster, put it on his legs. This is just terrible, I'm going to be late for work. And so he was. He was late for work. But it was September 11, 2001. That little plaster was in the hand of God, a means to preserve his life. Had he been just a few minutes early, he would have died when the building collapsed. Another story is told of a man who was shipwrecked on a deserted island. He was the only one alive, and so he managed to retrieve many things from the boat or ship, and then he waited, no one came, and he had no equipment to contact anyone. Finally, he decided to build a hut with whatever he could find, and then he brought all the food and things that he had retrieved and brought it into the hut and stayed there for a while. And one morning he started a fire as he normally do, and then he went out to hunt for some food by the sea. And when he got back, his hut was on fire. So he rushed to the hut and tried to get to retrieve the things, but the smoke was just overwhelming. He just couldn't get anything out. So he just sat there and sat down and just wept. All that I have, it's gone up in smoke. What am I going to do? After some time, he saw a ship coming in the horizon. And the ship started coming towards him. And he was ecstatic. And he said, how could the ship have come? So he asked the captain, what brought you here? And the captain said, I saw your smoke signal. Where was the smoke signal? Well, I'm sure many of you will have your own bandit story or your own smoke signal story. We must remember these things. When the Lord has dealt kindly with us through that time of trial, remember that those trials are in the hand of God for our good. God is sovereign. No matter how bad things may appear, God is in control, working all things together for our good. Working all things together for the good of them that love Him, them who are called according to His purpose. Therefore, secondly, let us learn to respond to hurt with conviction that God is sovereign. Joseph did that for his brothers because he believed that God was sovereignly working out all things for his good and for the good of Israel. He refused to bear a grudge against his brothers. His brothers could not understand. For 17 years, they thought that he was merely waiting for his father to die, to take revenge on them. But revenge was the last thing in Joseph's mind, especially when he knew that although evil was intended by his brothers, God had meant it for good. Ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore, fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. If Joseph had doubted at all that God was sovereignly working through the wickedness of his brothers, he could not have replied to them with such kindness. Or to put it in another way, what was it that encouraged Joseph to deal so kindly with his brethren? Was it merely because they were his brothers? Well, his brothers knew that there would not be a good enough reason for him not to pursue after them. So they thought that the best reason would be to go to Joseph and tell Joseph not to exact vengeance, because the father had said, don't exact vengeance, forgive them. They thought surely Joseph would respect Jacob's dying wishes. Well, they were totally off the mark. Joseph would indeed have respected his father's wish if the father had said that. But he need not have his father tell him what to do in this context. He knew what he must do upon the conviction that God meant all things that happened for his good and for the good of his family. Joseph was a man who conducted himself according to faith and according to godly principles. Shall we not learn from him? You know, most of us who are believers, at least most of us who have Calvinistic background, would believe that God is sovereign. And I'm sure we have memorized Romans 8:28, and we know that God is working all things well through even the pains and suffering that we all experience. But if that is so, how should we respond to those who have hurt us? Shall we not respond with kindness and graciousness in the way that Joseph did, rather than with bitterness and anger? Yes, we may not have the privilege of hindsight like Joseph had. Yes, we may not yet fully understand how the hurt that was inflicted upon us could be for our good. Yes, we may still be feeling sore about what is done to us or what was said about us. But should that make a difference? When God has so clearly taught us in, not only in our text, but in explicit passages in the scripture, that He's sovereignly working out all things for our good, including those things that seem so contrary to us. Shall we not learn rather to cast our cares upon the Lord and believe that He is doing all things well? Shall we not learn to thank God for His sovereignty and His promise, even if we are unable to understand at the moment why those terrible things happen to us, even if we are not able to thank Him at the moment for that the pain that we suffer in the hands of others? Shall we not go to the Lord in prayer? Lord, I do not understand why it happened the way it did, but I know that You are in control. For that I thank You. Help me not to hold it against them who hurt me for what they did to me. Lord, Thou dost know the hurts that I still feel in my heart. I don't know why that I have to go through it, but I know that You are in control. Help me not to blame others for the situation I am in. Help me to cast my cares upon You, knowing that You are doing all things for my good. You are in control even through all the trials that I experience. Not only should we react with kindness toward those who hurt us, let us also learn to seek to reassure those who worry about tomorrow that God is sovereign. That's the third thing. Joseph's brothers were so worried about what might happen to them after Jacob's death because they were quite clueless of the comfort that Joseph had. Joseph had to reassure them. Notice how he repeats himself to them. Fear not, for am I in the place of God? And again he said, fear not, fear ye not, I will nourish you. Joseph is essentially telling his brothers that they need not fear because God is in sovereign control as He was in control. He was in control, He is in control, He will be in control of all things. But more than that, Joseph by his actions proved that he believed what he said. Imagine what it would have been if Joseph had told them, fear not, I will not take vengeance against you, but do not expect me to help you anymore. From now on, you go your way and I go my way. I will not exact vengeance on you because good came out of your wickedness, but I'm not sure if you'll be so lucky the next time. Imagine if Joseph had said that. If Joseph had said that, he would be guilty of double talk. No, no. Joseph acted upon his belief that God was working all things well and will continue to do all things well. And so he urged his brothers not to fear what the future might hold. Am I in the place of God? He asked. If God brought you here by His sovereign power, will He abandon you? Will He allow it even if I want to exact vengeance? But far be it from me to want to exact vengeance at all. I would rather do the will of God and protect you and provide for you and your children. For I'm clear in my heart that this is the reason why God allowed you in the first place to sell me to Egypt. In this way, Joseph had a tremendous testimony among his brethren. Our beloved brethren and children, this is what we must do too. If we believe in God's sovereignty, let us not blame those who have fought against us. Let us not take vengeance or have any thoughts of bitterness against them, but rather carry a forgiving spirit towards them. But not only that, but let us seek to set an example by words and deeds that demonstrate our faith in the Lord, that He is sovereign. I think of the story I read somewhere. I think this is definitely fictional, but it kind of illustrates the point. It was a plane, a passenger plane flying over the Atlantic Ocean, and it was a storm, and suddenly lightning struck one of the engines, and the people were terrified. The engine is on fire. But then came in the intercom the pilot saying, ladies and gentlemen, the lightning has struck one of our engines, but everything is under control. Don't worry, we have three other engines. And so the people calmed down. A few minutes later, another lightning struck. Another of the engine caught fire. Came intercom again, ladies and gentlemen, don't worry, everything is under control. This is why we have four engines. Right? We will get you safely to your destination. So they calm down, and after some time lightning struck again. Another engine caught fire, and they heard over the intercom, ladies and gentlemen, don't worry, everything is under control. This is a pre-recorded message. You're on autopilot. We'll get you safely to your destination. And someone looked out and said, who's that on a parachute? The pilot had ejected. Well, you know, something like that sometimes happens to us, isn't it? You know the moral of the story. The pilot, while claiming to have everything under control, did not believe it himself. He bailed out. Is this how some of us speak of the doctrine of God's sovereignty? Don't worry, everything is under control. God will take care of you. But don't count me. Don't count it on me to be there. Our beloved brothers and sisters and children, let us act on what we believe. If you believe that God is in control, do not bail out and shirk responsibilities when the goings get tough. Learn from Joseph. He believed and he acted according to what he believed. He believed that God was in control in bringing his whole family to Egypt, so he resolved to protect and provide for his family, according as he believed that God was doing good to his brothers and their family. This way, both by his words and actions, Joseph assured his brothers that God was indeed sovereign and will sovereignly do good to them. Well, we must conclude. We learn three lessons tonight. First, we are reminded when we are faced with unhappy circumstances in our life that we must remember and believe that God is in sovereign charge over everything and is doing all things well for our good and for His own glory. This is the clear teaching of Scriptures. Unless we believe it, we are not going to be able to please God with our lives. But secondly, since we believe that God is in sovereign control, then we should respond with kindness rather than vengeance toward those who have occasioned our hurts. There's always the temptation to exact revenge against those who have hurt us, and we may exact vengeance, not only, you know, doing something terrible to them, but we can say things about them in the back. There's some kind of vengeance too. But let us dispel any thoughts of vengeance by remembering that the pains that are inflicted upon us by others are also in the sovereign control of God. And those things are to mow us. They are for us, for our good, our sanctification, and the cultivation of our patience, our trust in Him. But thirdly, since we believe that God is sovereign, let us encourage one another to trust in Him. Let us not behave as if we do not really believe that everything is under God's sovereign control. And the way to show that we do not believe is simply bail out of the situation and say that I'm not going to be there with you through all these difficulties. Let us rather seek to live by faith and hope so that we may be the means of God to encourage others to believe in His sovereignty. May the Lord grant us help that we may indeed live by faith and not by sight, that the name of Christ may be greatly magnified in us, that sinners may be provoked to ask for the reason of the hope that is in us, that they too may come, seek after Him, and find salvation in Him and Him alone. Only such as know and love the Lord Jesus Christ, believe in Him, justify in Him, may have this hope that all things are working well for them, because all things are only working well for them who are called according to His purpose. So tonight, if there be anyone in our midst who do not yet know the Lord Jesus Christ, turn to Him, find salvation in Him. Otherwise, all that we have said means nothing to you.